The name of the sermon is Remembrance of Things Past, and I can promise all of you that I'm not going to be talking about A la recherche de temps perdu and all of the volumes of it, but I want to talk about memory, because this tomorrow and today, incidentally, the part of the sermon that you won't hear, I'll be doing at 5 o'clock in an interfaith 9/11 memorial service with representatives from the Muslim Center, the rabbi from the temple, the minister from First Christian, and from the Presbyterian Church and other churches at St. Jude's Chapel. So that will be the other 10 minutes of the sermon. This is our Memorial Day. So far, 9/11 has been unsullied by white sails, by automobile races, by all of the things that we do to degrade and lose the meaning and the memory of those great events and celebrations, great and painful sometimes celebrations of our national secular religion. Memorial Day was meant to be a time of remembering the cost of freedom, remembering the people who served, the people who sacrificed, the people who died. This is what 9/11 has become. It has found the meaning of Memorial Day. And I hope that we can keep it. Memories and memorials are fading things. Neither marble nor the gilded monuments of man endure. They crumble and memories crumble and they change and they fade. And that is unavoidable. My memory is highly imperfect. I don't actually believe that, but my wife tells me that my memory is highly imperfect because we almost never go to the same parties. Because when I come back and say what happened, and she comes back and says what happened, they're completely different experiences. We remember common experiences very, very differently. Memories change and fade and are unreliable. I have what attorneys call independent recollection of exactly where I was when I saw the towers crumbling. I was sitting in an ER where I had taken my mother, and I was talking to a man who was a metallurgist, and he said, "They're coming down." I said, "What do you mean they're coming down?" He said, "They're coming down." I have a completely clear memory of this. It's false. It's false. I mean, I didn't make it up, but I conflated the times. I saw a tape of the buildings coming down because I saw the buildings coming down live on television at the time. But that other moment replaced it. Memory's a very unreliable historian. Well, history's an unreliable historian also. Some of us of a certain age understand that what happened 40 years ago is far clearer than what happened yesterday. Our memories change, and our ability to remember changes, and we change the past with our memories. In a way, my message today is a confessional. For many years, I said that the first rule of therapy and of theology was exactly the same. And it was, not even God can change the past. I am here to say I was wrong. We all change the past, all of the time. Tom Robbins, whom I quoted earlier about water, said, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. We get to go back, and in fact, we do go back, and things change in terms of what happened. Failures that seemed embarrassing and humiliating 40 years ago, today we can joke about. Triumphs that seemed earth-shattering 40 years ago, today nobody else remembers, and we have built them up into something involving a Nobel Prize and a Heisman Trophy and put it on our resume, which will come back to haunt us later. And sometimes it's not really lying. It really is being unstuck in time and going back and figuring out what those events then mean to us now, today, because they change. 9/11 was an insult that I'll never forget in terms of the insult, in terms of the emotional sense of violation, of destruction, of vulnerability, of fear, of rage, of all of those things that went through me when the intentionality of the act became clear. When the second plane went into the second tower and there was no plausible deniability. I couldn't look and say, oh, it's a movie, or it was a mistake. No, it was an attack, and it was a tragedy. Over the last 5 years, as I have done with all of my memories, those important memories from junior high school that I reimagine and re-experience in this CD, or DVD, that is our brains, it's random access memory, but not perfect random access. The random part is perfect. The memory part is a little shaky. But when I look at those feelings around 9/11, I have seen myself and I've seen much of our society go through what I think is a variation of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of dealing with death and dying. The first thing when I saw those planes was denial. It's not happening. I'd seen the scene 100 times in movies. Planes crashing into buildings. Great special effects. CGI was perfect. I'm saying it's a mistake. It's not happening. The second part after denial was rage and pain. Wanting to lash out in any way. Didn't have to make sense, because when we are wounded and in that stage of pain, of suffering, of grief, when something we know has fundamentally changed, we know that we have been through some kind of milestone in our personal lives and in the life of our nation, and 9/11 was nothing if it was not that. Our shining seas that had protected us for so long seemed to have dried up, and we were vulnerable and part of the mainland of humanity, unable to escape the consequences and the chaos of that great, terrible, and beautiful, and angry world out there. It came here. And along with the protection of the oceans, the protection of our plausible deniability also disappeared as we became part of humanity. Over time, it has gone from that to bargaining. We'll give up this freedom to get this kind of security. We'll give up this money if you will promise to keep it offshore. We'll give up. We'll bargain. We'll do all of these things. And it's the bargaining behavior that people do about life and death. And it's completely understandable that we are moved from denial to pain to rage to bargaining. With death, it's a little easier in some ways, because there is an end. And theoretically, the last stage is acceptance. I should footnote here that people don't go through Kubler-Ross's stages evenly and neatly and sequentially. Sometimes we'll go through all 5 stages in 45 minutes and go back to number 1. We cycle through them. I think the last stage in the 9/11 process is one that we are in now chronically. And that's not acceptance, that's anxiety. And that's a terrible place to be. Most human beings deal better with disaster than we do with anxiety. Most of us can actually deal with reality. I know that seems very strange, because there are lots of ads on TV for all kinds of drugs to take so that you don't have to deal with reality, except with a pill. But most of us deal with reality really pretty admirably. And that's part of what the message of 9/11 was, or one of the messages. Because memories change, emotions change, understanding changes as we go through time together. What happened? Was it an accident? Was it an attack? Was it 10,000 people, 3,000 people? Was it a conspiracy of brilliant geniuses or a confederacy of dunces? We go through stages of understanding and re-examining again and again to find out not what it means, but what it means to me today. What are the positive lessons, the nourishing lessons that we can take from catastrophe and failure? Because the truth is that most of us, and I will tell you for me, it's a sure and certain thing, most of us learn far more from our failures than from our triumphs. We learn when things don't work. We learn when we have to come out of cruise control and take direction and decide to do something and to react to something and change something that wasn't working. One of the things that wasn't working at 9/11 was communication. Another was denial. It's important to go through and find the nourishing part of any experience, of any negative experience. Because I'm not going to argue that 9/11 was worth it. I'm not going to argue that every cloud has a silver lining. I will argue that we have an opportunity to learn throughout our lives and to learn more from our mistakes and our disasters. To really pay attention to what's important and what's nourishing. And to me, the heart of what happened at 9/11 that gives me joy through my tears is what worked. Human beings were extraordinary. What's the message of 9/11? That it's our worst, that there are such anger and rage that people will get into airplanes, will slit the throats of pilots, will crash into buildings. That's all true and part of humanity, our inhumanity. But it is also true that without thinking, without judging, people ran into buildings to save human lives. They didn't ask to see passports. They didn't ask religion. They didn't care about somebody's sexuality or marital status or how much money they had in the bank. People went in, civilians and police and medical techs, all kinds of people reached out to help other human beings, because when all of the things that we use to keep us apart from each other was covered in the gray dust and soot and ash of that catastrophe, we saw the humanity underneath all of that. Class and race and religion were wiped out, and we saw human beings. Wow. What a treat it would be to be able to keep that memory. To be able to keep that memory and put it inside our hearts and draw upon it when we see the madness out there. To draw upon it when we feel the madness and the rage at those people, whoever those people are. And those people also change, by the way. But that core of goodness that is in people of all faiths and races and political persuasions, that is as important a part of our humanity as all of the rage and all of the fear. The fires, the physical fires, the firefighters put out, the water carried the soot and the ash, the toxins, the minerals, the traces, into the river, into the sea. It will recycle again and again. But can we distill and keep the water of life, the living core of the one decent part of that indecent day? Can we make this our living memorial to hold the valor, the courage, the selflessness that all of us are capable of in our hearts to give us strength, moral strength, physical strength, and courage to engage the world as best we can, understanding that there will be rage, understanding that there will be anxiety, but understanding also that there is choice and there is beauty and there is love. And it is in the face of these disasters that it is most important to affirm that love.